This program is brought to you by PersonalLifeMedia.com.
Hello, everybody. Today's is the third in my Lessons from San Francisco series. Today's episode is called South of Market. Conversely, it is funny how often Bohemians enlist. Maybe it is a form of irony. Maybe it's all about adventure. Maybe it is our way of acquiring experience. Maybe we have nothing better to do, having flunked out of college or arrived at some equivalent empty moment. I stayed in fleabag hotel rooms from which, in the 50s, beat writers moved laterally to equally grim working class quarters. I knew seedy San Francisco first. Probably most writers who come here poor and know the Tenderloin better than Pacific Heights and noodle restaurants better than the Garden Court. Market Street seemed a step down from the Lower East Side, and South of Market, with its winos and derelicts sleeping head to foot like daisy chains, felt like Damon Runyon gone really sour. Let's begin. Dateline, 1966. When I wheeled my armored personnel carrier down the rutted road between grassy minefields, I felt the joy that only a 19-year-old can feel, a cigarette between his lips and a 30-caliber machine gun poised behind his ear. I should have been in the higher turret, manning that machine gun and monitoring the other three armored personnel carriers in the platoon, since I was acting platoon sergeant. But as acting platoon sergeant, I got to designate myself as driver. I just loved to wheel that beast down those Korean back roads. I have personally never met a Republican who served in the Army. I'm sure there are some, there must be, as a statistical matter. All the Republicans I've ever met, including those in my extended family, would have loved to serve, except that some darn thing or another prevented them from raising their hands. I am not saying that they were cowards, hypocrites, or liars, but I am surprised at how small an effort they made to overcome their circumstances and land themselves in a nice pair of fatigues. Given their rhetoric, I would have thought they would have tried harder. Conversely, it is funny how often Bohemians enlist. Maybe it is a form of irony. Maybe it's all about adventure. Maybe it is our way of acquiring experience. Maybe we have nothing better to do, having flunked out of college or arrived at some equivalent empty moment. Maybe, though in love with freedom, we also love to march. Maybe we actually care about the American experiment. I would like to see it continue. Who can say? I can only speak for myself. For some set of reasons, I wandered into the recruiting office on Times Square one summer day in 1965 and enlisted. So it was that I ended up at Fort Ord, an army post 2 hours south of San Francisco on the Monterey Peninsula, where I did my advanced infantry training during the winter of 1965 and the spring of 1966. Now it is a campus of the California College System, but then it was the place where you got ready for Vietnam. During the week, I would fire recoilless rifles, grenade launchers, and machine guns. On Friday evenings, I would head for San Francisco. Sometimes I hitchhiked with a buddy, and sometimes I took the special bus filled with GIs that ran express from Fort Ord to the Greyhound bus terminal south of Market, dead square in Wino Land. I stayed in fleabag hotel rooms from which, in the 50s, beat writers moved laterally to equally grim working-class quarters. Jack Kerouac described his room and his mental state in October in the Railroad Earth, published in 1960. Quote, "And there's my room, small, gray in the Sunday morning. Now all the franticness of the street and the night before is done with. Bums sleep, maybe one or two sprawled on the sidewalk with empty poor boy on a sill. My mind whirls with life, my whole soul and concomitant eyes looking out on this reality of living and working in San Francisco with that pleased, semi-loin-located shudder, energy for sex changing to pain at the portals of work and culture and natural foggy fear." Unquote. I wasn't writing yet. I was about to turn 19 and hadn't a clue about life. The previous year I'd flunked out of college, gone on a road trip, and then enlisted. Coursing through me was the raw stuff of youth that manifested as pure enjoyment of firing weapons, a trickster urge to shoplift and give the loot away, and, of course, sexual desire. In a few months I would be in Asia. I knew that I was going there, knew that I was in limbo, knew without knowing it that everything becomes surreal while you wait to ship out. I walked Market Street. Like tourists and locals today, I couldn't decide if Market Street was San Francisco's main street. If it was, with its discount stores, McDonald's, and grim, littered, unremarkable ordinariness, it lowered the city in your estimation. For me, it was San Francisco, and when I veered off it, I veered south, toward the homeless and the lost. Now, south of Market has multiple meanings, including once prospering and now defunct dot-coms, leather bars, and swank designer hotels, museums like the San Francisco Museum of Modern Art and the Contemporary Jewish Museum, and enough culture to earn it a fancy new SOMA appellation, which, however, no San Franciscan uses. Then it mostly meant down and out. I knew seedy San Francisco first. Probably most writers who come here poor, and know the Tenderloin better than Pacific Heights, and noodle restaurants better than the Garden Court. Market Street seemed a step down from the Lower East Side, and south of Market, with its winos and derelicts sleeping head to foot like daisy chains, felt like Damon Runyon gone really sour. Some nights I would have to jam a chair under the doorknob against the alcoholic commotion in the corridors. Our barracks at Fort Ord, with its polished floors, because we buffed them, and its clean urinals, because we scoured them, seemed luxurious by comparison. Could I have lived and written south of Market? Who can say? In the history of writing, writers have come from every class and circumstance. It is a trick of dualistic thinking to say that only the poor writer, steeled in the streets, will write, or that only the comfortable writer, not worried about starving, will continue to write. The fact of the matter is that the only writer who will write is the writer who writes. He will write one-armed, blind, or with a billion in the bank. He will write in a good suit or naked at his makeshift desk. He likely will die younger if he is poor, for all the obvious reasons, but that is a separate matter. If he is a writer, he will write, whether atop Knob Hill or south of Market. That ends today's show. I hope that you enjoyed it, and I hope that you'll tune in next week for another episode of The Joy of Living Creatively. If you subscribe to The Joy of Living Creatively, you won't miss a single episode. To subscribe, please visit personallifemedia.com or look for The Joy of Living Creatively in iTunes. You might also want to visit my blog, where many guest correspondents write about issues of interest to creative people. My blog is available at the personallifemedia.com website. If you'd like to drop me an email, I'd love to hear from you. My email address is eric@personallifemedia.com. And I hope that you'll visit my website to learn more about my books and services, including my annual Taos workshops. To visit, please head over to ericmaisel.com. That's ericmaisel.com. Thank you for listening.
Find more great shows like this on personallifemedia.com.